Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Chav Tad Amad Bet. Gemara is discussing the line in the Mishnah about the principle in the Mikdash as to when one relieves themselves, what's the requirement in order to return to the Avodah, go into the Mikdash. And the Mishnah had said that Pala Mesechet Raglab Tahun Tefillah, that anybody who defecates has to have a full-fledged Tefillah. Pala Matil Mayim. Anybody who urinates, Tahun Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim, has to wash their hands and their feet. So Gemara says, Bishlama Raglayim, I understand why you have to wash your legs, because of the drops, loose drops that might have hit the feet or the legs. Why do you have to wash your hands? So the assumption being that a person does not come into contact with any part of their body when they're urinating. They simply open themselves up and urinate. So in terms of their hands, there's no reason to wash their hands. In terms of their legs, there might be a possibility of splashing or drips that came onto the legs that they would have to wash. From this, we learn, mitzvah l'shafshef. It's a mitzvah to rub down any drops of urine that fall on your legs or your feet. You should rub them down. So now, once you've done that, you've engaged the hands in the process as well, which is now you have your hands and your legs that you need to wash down. Now, Gemara says, misayile the Rabbi Ami. This helps Rabbi Ami. Dama Rabbi Ami, asur l'adam sheyetzei minitzotzot she'al gabei raglav. Person may not walk out with any drops on his feet or on his legs, areas that were exposed. Because he looks like a kruch shufcha, which is someone who is unable to procreate, because he's unable to eject the sperm far enough to impregnate a woman. But the same would be true with his urine, which is that he wouldn't have that same strength and his ability to urinate and wouldn't move away from his body. And because of that, it would drip on his body. And then motzi lazal banav shei mamzerim. And then he will cause there to be rumors, or people will suspect that his children don't belong to him. So the fear here of the urine on the legs is not necessarily hygienic, but a problem that other people will see this and think that he is somehow impaired in his ability to procreate. And because of that, it's going to cause problems for his children, because people say that he's not the father of his children. Now, in terms of the hands, you're right, then it's a hygienic issue, because then once you have to wipe that down with your hands, then you're washing the hands because you touch the urine that's there. Now, as Tosafot points out over here about mitzvah l'shafshef, he says we do have a machloket with regards to this, whether a person can hold their amah when they are urinating. Is it permissible to hold your amah while you're urinating in order to direct the urine away from the body? It's machlok between Chachamim, the Rabbanan, and Rabbi Elazar. And this is shita to Rabbi Elazar, that you're not allowed to touch the amah, implying that the Chachamim would suggest that you could hold the amah. If that's the case, you wouldn't have a problem. The Tosafot says, well, maybe not. Even according to the Chachamim, you would have a problem. Just how much of a problem would you have? How much problem of these nitzotzot, these drips coming onto your legs, will you have if you're controlling where you're urinating? That he answers first, and then he goes, a large Tosafot here goes on to prove that he thinks the Chachamim retracted their position to that position of Rabbi Elazar, and that they actually also believe that you cannot be machzik ba'ama, cannot hold your ama while you are urinating. So Tosafot, based on that, says that this can be, even according to the shita of the Chachamim, does not have to be relegated to the shita of Rabbi Elazar. Halachically, the Gemara in Nida speaks about it as well, and this is machloket in the Rishonim, as to whether if someone's married already, there's less of an issue. Which is that they being machzik the amah, the fear is that a person will be mitlamim from that, get excited from that, and there it'll cause more problems, carry or other issues, vis-a-vis just urinating. The Gemara does have an exception, possibly, for someone who's married already, where they won't consider to be papa solo, it's not an issue anymore, and therefore the halacha has dispensations for someone who's married. It doesn't necessarily favor that, but it says if someone is married, then it's possibly that it'd be okay. But otherwise, they also discourage it, even for someone who's married, if it's not necessary. The Gemara says, Amara papa, soa bimkoma, asur likro kriyat shema. If you have soa, feces, in their location, meaning where they exit the anal orifice, so if there is feces that is stuck there, you cannot read Kriyat Shema. And Marav Miranshenberg over here discusses what's this doing over here. It probably has to do with the Mishnah, which is called Mesechet Raglav. Anybody who defecates has to go to the mikveh. So what's the issue with defecating and going to the mikveh? It might have to do with this, exactly, that the Toa causes a problem. A person reading Kriyat Shema, it precludes them from being engaged in Avodah or Divrei Kiddushah. Sehechidami. What's the case here in terms of the feces? E denirate, if it's visible, pshita, then what's the question? E delonirate, if it's not visible, lo ni, na torah, the malachi asherate. Very important principle. We're not angels. You don't have to be perfect. We assume that you're a human being. If you're a human being, it's not visible. It's not possible for you to clean it out because it's just not within the realm of reach. Unless you do some acrobatics, then we're not going to expect you to do that. The Torah is given so that people conduct themselves like human beings. So this is beyond the reach of a human being. So we're not going to expect you to do anything about it. Lo tzricha, the yoshev v'nirait v'omeid v'ein anirait. Now it's a case here where when he's in the squat position, when he sits down, it's visible. But when he stands up, it's no longer visible. So that's why it's sitting in between these two categories of being visible and not visible, because it depends on his position. It says, why is this any different than feces on any other part of his body? If he has feces on his body, or he sticks his hands into the beta kisei, Ravuna mar mutar the krot kriyat shema. He can read kriyat shema. Seems that the Torah that's stuck on his body doesn't smell anymore. It's not problematic, and he can be korei kriyat shema. He can put his hands into the beit kisei because he's outside. He's physically outside the beit kisei. He's just sticking his hands through some holes into the beit kisei. And that's not problematic. He, personally, he's found in a place where he should be fine to read kriyat shema. Chista mar asur the krot kriyat shema. Chista, on the other hand, says you cannot read kriyat shema. But even Rav Chista, who says you cannot read Kriyat Shema because of the pasuk kolat smotai tomarna, that my entire being has to speak before Hashem, go before Hashem. It's actually the source for shuckling when you daven. It's kolat smotai tomarna, that all my limbs should speak to you, Hashem. That's why we move when we're davening, because we want to show that all our limbs are reaching out to Hashem. So the same thing over here. The reason that he says there's a problem here is because kolat smotai tomarna, even because your hands are inside the Beit HaKisei, that disqualifies you from Kriyat Shema, not because you yourself cannot read Kriyat Shema in the position, but because of this pasuk of Kolat Smotai Tomarna, your hands are no longer in a position where they can also serve Hashem. So because of that, you're disqualified. But you see from both of them that the problem of feces, Tzoa, is not because of the Tzoa itself. It's not Tzoa that is causing the problem. Even according to Rav Chista, who's Oser, it's not that Tzoa itself, it's because one of your limbs is somehow disqualified. So here, why is there a difference in the din of Tzoa, Bimkoma? The Gemara answer is, Bimkoma nafish zuhuma, shlom bimkoma lo nafish zuhuma. That when the feces is still in its location, where it's dispelled from, then it's problematic. Whereas when it's on the body, it's not problematic because of the nature of those areas. If it's on the rest of the body, it has time to aerate, to dry out, and therefore, it doesn't smell so bad. It loses its quote-unquote properties of being tzoa, a feces, and causing a problem. On the other hand, when it remains in the location of where it's relieved from, in that location, it's hotter, it's warmer, and that causes it to maintain its character, both because of the smell and because of the fact that there's no air flowing there. It's trapped in there. And so because of that, it remains problematic. So that's the difference over here. The feces in its location causes you a bigger problem than feces that's come out, dissipated in a sense, because it's been aerated and drying out. Now, Tana Rabbanan, halacha b'su'uda. This is the halacha by a su'uda. Interesting, halacha b'su'uda means this is the way one should conduct themselves during a meal. Brought from a tosefta in brachot. Adam yotzei la'ashtin mayim. If a person leaves the meal to urinate, he washes that one hand that he used. Assumption being that he used one hand to lishaf sheif, to wipe down any drops around his leg. And he comes back in. If he left the table to go speak to one of his friends, and he was gone for a little bit more time than expected, he has to wash both hands, and then he goes in. So if he goes to urinate and then returns immediately, then the one hand that was engaged in that process has to be washed. On the other hand, if he moves away from the table to go discuss something with his friend, he goes to the door to answer the door and stays there for a certain amount of time, over there he needs to wash both hands because of a problem called hesach hadat. Netilat yadayim, between the time you wash your hands and the time that you make hamotzi, the problem is not a problem of what we call hefsek. It's not a problem of interruption. That's the problem, like for instance, if you make a bracha hamotzi and then you don't eat the bread right away, then you have a problem of hefsek. There you cannot interrupt between the bracha hamotzi and actually eating, consuming the bread itself. For netilat yadayim, the main issue is hesach hadat, that you can't have your mind leave your hands. Once your hands are washed, they're now prepped for eating, they're now tahor, and you can eat. You've done what you were supposed to do in terms of tilat yadayim. They only lose that status if you somehow are mesiach dat mehem, that your mind leaves them. Exactly for that reason, that the hands engage unbeknownst or unconsciously. They touch parts of the body, they touch things, they're just moving around, and they got themselves into trouble in that way, in terms of both tuman and in terms of dirt. So because of that, hezek hadat's the key issue. That's why, for instance, if you get to the table and there's no salt on the table on Shabbat, and you need someone to bring you the salt, you're allowed to say, please bring me the salt. That is not a problem after you've washed your hands, mainly till the time before amotzi. Because the issue, again, is not hefsek, it's an issue of hezek hadat. So only if you take your mind off the eating at hand do you have a problem. It's also the reason you could possibly wash in the morning and use that for hamotzi later on. There are all sorts of factors that come out of that. So here, when he leaves the table to go discuss or engage with his friend, then in that situation, if he hifli, he leaves for a certain amount of time, he has to wash his hands when he comes back because of hezek hadat. He hasn't left there long enough or far enough to generate a separate bracha. That we did in Arvei Pesachim. In Arvei Pesachim, we discussed the issue of how long a person has to leave the table or move away to force himself to either to have to bench, according to the Rambam, and then say a bracha rishona, according to the other rishonim, to have to make a new bracha rishona, because he's left the su'udah, and he needs to now restart the su'udah. So as Rashi points out over here, he only leaves long enough to cause himself a problem in terms of his netilat yadayim, but not long enough to cause himself a bracha rishona problem, where he has to make a new bracha. So here he has to wash both hands because problem exists for both hands before he comes back in. No, that's totally separate. Right? The problem with relieving himself, that could be for a very short duration. That's not hezek hadat, that's simply he engaged with something that was non-hygienic, dirty, and therefore he can't come back in without washing that hand. Whereas here, the problem is hezek hadat. Now, kishuhu notel lo yitol b'chutz. When he washes his hand, he shouldn't do it outside. V'ikanes, and then come back in. Mipnei chashad. Because of the suspicions of the other people that are there. Ela nechas v'yoshev b'mkomal. He comes back in and sits in his place. V'notel shtei yadav. He washes both hands. Machzir atzpiach al orchim. And he passes the pitcher around to all of the orchim. So let's deal with that last line. Last line is that the washing cup that he uses, he passes it around. Like, you take some food, anybody else want more? And you pass it around to everybody. So also over here, where he washes his hands, he passes it around to everybody. Not because anybody else has to wash their hands, but to make a public declaration that I just washed my hands. How does he do that? He says, oh, anybody else need to wash their hands. So it's done in the presence of the others, as well as passing around. That's one. Number two is, kishu no tel lo yitol b'chutz. What is that modifying? We have two statements in the Brayta, the Tosefta. One is that you have to wash one hand when you go out to urinate. The other one is that you have to wash both hands when you're out for a certain duration. Now over here, when it says don't wash them outside, but must wash them inside, which of those two cases are you referring to? Amar Rav Chista, lo amran elo lishtot. Here, it's only we're talking about when he has to drink. When he has to wash for eating, then he does it outside. And comes in. Because everybody knows that people are particular about this. Nobody would eat with their hands without washing, and then there's no suspicion left anymore. So Rashi says this all has to do with the latter half of the Braita. The first statement about washing inside and not outside has to do with when you stepped away. And number two, that is only for drinking, not for eating. That's the way Rashi reads it. Why does he do all this? That he has to be yitol b'chutz, elo she'eino tzarich od le'chol. Case that he can't go wash outside is a case where he doesn't want to eat anymore. Elo lishtot. He wants to drink. They're only drinking. They're not eating anymore. Rashi says they're in the later stages of the meal, where there is yayin shachar suda. For Rashi, yayin achar suda means literally after the suda. It's like the dessert wine. That's not the wine after benching, but the wine before benching. That dessert wine, they're sitting and drinking. Over there, you're not allowed to wash outside, you have to wash inside. Hu nechnas, shahiyu regilim larich lishtot b'shtiyah achar mazon. Miu, tzarich litol, shem yitein prusa l'toch piv. What we're afraid of is that while he's still drinking that dessert wine, he will pop something else into his mouth to eat something else, and then he would need to wash his hands. So according to Rashi, technically he wouldn't have to wash at all. But two things. One is we're afraid of the other people seeing him not wash, and therefore we have him wash in front of them. That's number one. Number two is we make him wash even though he's not coming back to eat. He's simply drinking. And you don't have to wash to drink. Because to wash for peirot is migasei aruach, and you wouldn't have to wash for this. So for these two reasons, we force another one to wash, because maybe he'll eat the food. Number two, we make him wash in front of the people, because there is a suspicion that he wouldn't wash. When he comes back in to simply drink, he doesn't have to wash. So they would suspect he didn't wash, and that would bother them. So we force him to wash in front, where there's a suspicion that he wouldn't wash. Now, going to Rashi, that means if you came back in to eat, you wouldn't have to wash in front of them. Because then everybody would assume you washed outside. Because anina date, which is that people are particular about this. People will not eat food. Remember their day, we're not dealing with cutlery, utensils, you're eating with your hands, your fingers. So nobody would come back in to eat without washing their hands. So there, you don't have to demonstrate it in front of them because there would be no suspicion that you didn't wash before you came back in. So that's the way Rashi reads the qualification here of the Tosefta, which is, it's referencing the case where a person went out and now he has to come back in. He's commanded simply to drink and he has to wash inside, not outside, because of that suspicion that he wouldn't wash. And he himself has to wash because we're afraid that he might eat also. That's the way Rashi views this whole thing. On the other hand, in the Tosfot Yishanim, he brings down from the Riva, Perish Riva, the Noto Yado Achat Kai, going on washing one of his hands. Tetzarech Litol Bifnim, Kemen Yishagdu Ashlo Natal, Aval Echol, Notel Bachutz, Inkar Chashad, Devadai Natal. So the Riva says it's referencing the case of urinating. That he used one hand, he has to wash the one hand. And he's only coming back in to drink. That's the case where he has to do it inside because of the suspicion. So the Riva thinks that that statement, this whole part of the Gemara is modifying the first statement in Tosefta, because Rashi says that it's modifying the second part of the Tosefta. And therefore, the halacha is based on that. Tosefta Yishanim brings it down here. From this shmaita we conclude, Kol adam shishtin mayin v'shivshev v'yado, tzirich litol miyad oto yad v'shivshev, that a person who goes out and urinates, and his mishapshef, and he rubs his leg down, he's got to wash right away before he goes back in to eat. In a case when he leaves for a duration, according to the country, you have to re-wash both hands. Even though he didn't go out for so much time. So over here you have the halacha, which is brought down in terms of leaving the meal in the middle, what you have to do. The Mishnah Brura discusses the problem of whether you should make a bracha or not on this netilat yadayim. That's subject to machloket achronim, based on the sheet of the Rishonim. It's heavily debated whether you have to make a brocha on this type of netilat yadayim. You have to wash both hands when you come back in. You have to wash both hands. And if he goes out to urinate, he has to wash that one hand that he used in terms of being mishef shef. But if he didn't touch anything, he went out and urinated and didn't touch anything, technically he does not have to wash whatsoever. Brought down by the Roma in Shulchan Aruch, where this halacha is brought in Siman Kuf Ayin. The Roma says, if you touch nothing, then you don't have to wash your hands at all. So in terms of urinating, if you touch nothing, you don't have to do anything. If you're mishapshef one hand, you have to simply wash that one hand. If you engage both hands, then you have to wash both hands. On the other hand, for leaving for duration, there you have to wash both hands, and that's even if you didn't touch anything because of the problem of Hesech Hadat. There you need to wash both hands before you come back in. So here's the halacha that derives from the Riva and from Rashi. Rashi speaking about the case where you leave for duration, and the Riva speaking about the case where you have to be notel yado achat. And again, that's all for drinking. You have to do it for the other people present. But if it's only you, then you don't have that issue because there's no anina date. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Va'ana, filu ishtot nama mida yaldei danina datai. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that I'm not subject to this halacha of washing inside, because everybody knows that I'm so particular, that I have, bothers me, or upsets me, that even if someone is just drinking, that they want their hands washed, that everybody knows that if I go out and I did anything, that I definitely washed my hands before I came back in, because nobody would even think that I didn't wash my hands before I drank, because I'd be so uncomfortable with that situation. So that's maybe true today again, where in terms of hygiene, nobody would expect someone to come out of the bathroom and not have washed their hands, that you don't have to wash in front of them, because it's considered to be unhygienic, it's considered to be something that people would be disgusted by, even personally, so therefore you can assume that they did wash their hands. Now again, that's all assuming that that default is true, right? You have to know who your parties are to know whether that's the default. Alright, next Mishnah. Ein adam nichnas la'zara la'buda afilu tohor ad shidbo. Person, even if they are tahor, may not enter into the avara. The mission says to do avoda, even if you are tahor, until you go to the mikveh. It's a prerequisite that you must go to the mikveh before you enter into the azara. Now the word avoda, Rashi and Tosafot here say lav dafka. Not even for avoda, it's even if you enter. Simply enter into the azara, you have to go to the mikveh, even if you're not doing any avoda. Possibly because, shemi avoda de avoda, maybe you will do avoda in the end. But even coming into the Azara, you have to go to the mikveh first. The Tosafot Yishanim tries to figure out why then did the Mishnah mention Avodah. Everybody has the girsa of Avodah here. So why is Avodah mentioned if it's not the focus? I mean, it's just about entering the Mikdash. So again, it might have to do with the fact that the reason we want you to go to the mikveh when You're not doing avodah is because you might come to do avodah, or you might engage in something. Number two is, okay, here's the process in Yom Kippur, which is chamesh tefilot, v'asara kiddushim, tovel, kohen gadol, mekadesh bo bayom. So there are five times that the kohen gadol goes to the mikveh, tovel, and there are 10 times that he's mekadesh his hands and his feet on the day of Yom Kippur. Kulam b'kodesh, all of them done are in the mikveh that's in the kodesh, obeit ha-parva, chutz mizu bilvad, except for this one, which is the first one. That's why here in the Mishnah, the first one that everybody does going into the Azara, Parsus Adin Shelbutz Beno Ben Am. How they did this is they held up a linen sheet between him and the Am to give him the privacy to enter into the mikveh. If you remember back on Daf Yutet, there were two mikvaot that we mentioned in the Azara, or at least two mikvaot in the Azara. There's one that was above Shar HaMayim, and there was one that was above Beit HaParva. They're both on the southern side of the Azara. The one that was on the top of the Shar HaMayim was for people entering into the Azara. So that was something that was Bechol. That was not in the Kodesh, that was in Bechol. The one above the Beit HaParva was actually found inside the Azara. It was above the three chambers that were there on the southern side. Lishkat HaMelach, Lishkat HaParva, and Lishkat HaMadichim. Those three that are on the side, on top of them, on the Aliyah above them, was the Mikveh. But they are found in the Azara. And that's Makom Kadosh. And that's because in Parshat Achrimot, when it describes the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol, it says, V'tavah Makom Kadosh. He has to go into the Mikveh in a Makom Kadosh. So that must be in the Azara itself. So that Mikveh on the Beit HaParva was used during the Avodah at Yom HaKippurim for the Kohen Gadol to go to the Mikveh. But for his first dip before he went in to do the avodah, that he did above the Shar HaMayim, which is the one, the chol, and that's the introductory phrase to this Mishnah, which is everybody has to go to the mikveh before they enter into the Azara.
One of
those Shar HaMayim. I don't know if they were giving him extra privacy, or whether that on the doorway to the mikveh, meaning that that was the door. There wasn't a physical door there. Rather, there was a curtain that hung there that separated between him and the Am. That was what gave him the privacy. There was no door to the mikveh. There was simply a sadin. So Parsus Adin is not necessarily for him in this instance, but it's curtain that hangs there to separate between him and the Am. Bishalu ben Zoma. Tvila zu lema. Why do you do this tvila before you go into the Azara? The guy's totally tahor. Even if he knows he's totally tahor, he has to go to the mikveh. So him, he says it's a kavachomer. Uma mishoneh mikodesh to kodesh, umakom shanush karet, umakom shanush karet, ton tvila. So a person who goes from Kodesh to Kodesh, has to go to the mikveh. And one who's changing from a location that you are Chayav Karet if you go into May to another place where you're Chayav Karet if you go into May. Shanei Michol to Kodesh. Someone who comes from outside of the Mikdash, from Chol into the Kodesh, from Makom Sheinanush Karet, from a place where you can enter and there's no Karet associated with being Tamei there, the Makom Sheinanush Karet, and Udin Shantu and Tefillah, certainly requires Tefillah. Ben Zoma basically says the Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim requires Tefillah 4 times when he's changing from avoda to avoda, the avodat lifnim to avodat chutz. He's switching from the avoda in the big day lavan, which is avoda that's done lifnim, meaning into the eichal, lifnay lifnim, into the kodesh hakodeshim. In those instances, he has to put on big day lavan and he has to go to the mikveh. When he comes out from there and switches back into the big day azar, he has to go to the mikveh again before he switches. Now, he's switching from a place to eichal to the azara. In terms of the din, they're both chayav karet if you're tamei in them. So there's no change in terms of the status of the location, yet he has to go to the mikveh. He's changing from Makom Kadosh to Makom Kadosh, from Heichal to the Azara. Now the Tosfot Yishanim over here says, I don't understand. That's saying the same thing twice. He says that's the way Rashi explains it. Saying the same thing twice. You're switching from a Makom Kadosh, which is Heichal, to Makom Kadosh, which is Azara. Switching from a place, Anush Karet, which is the Heichal, to Anush Karet, which is the Azara. It's 2 ways of saying the same thing. So he says, me Kodesh to Kodesh means from Big Day Kodesh to Big Day Kodesh. He's switching from the Big Day Zav to the Big Day Lavan, or Big Day Lavan to Big Day Kodesh. Plus, he's switching from the Eichal to the Azara. In that case, he has to go to the Mikveh. So if he has to go to the Mikveh there, then you, or a person that's coming in from Chol, he's wearing Big Day Chol, he's coming from a location of Chol and going into the Kodesh, certainly has to go to the Mikveh. Kal v'chomer. The Tosafot over here discusses, well, there's Pirchot to this. You have a Pircha. Yom Kippur is special because of this, because of this, because of that. So he says, you know what it'll end up being? He says, you're right. All those things might be true. That all Ben Zoma is going to say is, okay, you're right. Then that tzvila has to have all the trappings of the tzvila of Yom HaKippurim. Anything you're going to say to me that's unique about Yom Kippur, I'll just say that and brings it into the Kal v'chomer. And that's the type of tzvila you're going to need to enter into the Mikdash. So Ben Zoma sees this as, number one, a din d'oraita. Number two, he sees it as an absolute requirement. You may not enter the Mikdash. We'll see why that has a nafka mina in a second. In terms of the obligation d'oraita, Tosafot says over here, it's only an obligation d'oraita if he goes in to do avoda. Just like the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim. Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, when he enters, he's going in to do avoda. That means that if he enters here not to do avoda, then it's only a din d'rabbanan that he has to go to the mikvah before he enters Shema Yaseh Avoda, because maybe he might do avoda. So there are two gradations here. One gradation is d'oraita, if you're going in to do avoda. D'rabbanan, if you're just simply going into the azara. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, the entire din is a din d'rabbanan. Srach tvila hizu. It's srach tumah, is the way Chachamim described netilat yadayim before hamotzi, that we wash our hands. It's because of srach tumah. Is the worry about the hands of becoming tamei. We do it because of the kohanim that need to wash before truma. So for srach tumah means the fear of tuma. Fear of tuma, we wash your dime. So to be a srach tvila here is the idea that it's because of our fear. What's the fear? Kadeshi swore tuma yishana should be a dope bifrosh. That a person will remember some tuma that he had and then he'll pull out. Person is not focused on or engaged dealing with tuma and tara entering to the azara. She says, yeah, I'm tahor. But then he doesn't really think through the whole situation before he enters. So if we make him to go to the mikveh, we engage him, we focus him on the issue. Or maybe you were tamei. Maybe you did need to go to the mikveh. Maybe you need Harav Shemesh. Maybe you need to wait. So this going to the mikveh is not a requirement, but rather a reminder. It's a way to engage you in the issue of Tumah Tahara and say, wait, maybe I am tamei. Maybe I shouldn't go in. Maybe I should wait for Harav Shemesh. Maybe I should take some precaution. That's the whole purpose of this tefillah. But Micah Miflegay, what are they arguing about? Mar says, Bachule Avoda Kamiflegay. They're arguing about whether if you do this Avoda without going to the mikveh, is it kasher? Well, according to Rabbi Huda, it's clearly kasher because there's only a din derabonon that you go to the mikveh to remind you. So if a kohen goes in and doesn't go to the mikveh and he's tahor and does Avoda, then it should be fine. The Ben Zoma, who says that din d'oraita, if you don't do it, you're not qualified to do Avoda. And that's what Mar says, the Ben Zoma Mechel Avoda. According to Ben Zoma, you ruin the avoda. If you do avoda after not going to the mikvah, it's ois avoda. You can't. It has to be repeated. No avoda. Rabbi Yehuda lo machal avoda. Rabbi Yehuda says din d'rabbanan. It's just a reminder. If the guy's tahor, then his avoda is fine. But Ben Zoma mi machil. Is that really true that Ben Zoma thinks that you ruin the avoda when you don't go to the mikveh? Vatanya, we have a braita. Kohen gadol shlo taval v'lo kidesh ben beged the beged. Kohen gadol that doesn't go to the mikveh and doesn't wash his hands between switching his clothing between the big day lavan, big day zahav on Yom Kippurim. Between the different avodot and Yom Kippurim, avoduto k'sheira. His avodah is good. Now, he violated the mitzvah that say to go to the mikveh, but his avodah is still okay. Echad going gadol, echad going ejol, shelo kidei shedav raglav shacharit, vavad avodah, avoduto psula. Here, if you, in the morning, before you do avodah, don't wash your hands and feet, you're disqualified from doing avodah, and you're posel the avodah. That's a going ejol, going gadol. So that's an absolute necessity. That's learned down in the Gemara in Zvachim from the Psukim, why it's Me'akev, Netilat Yadayim. But what's clear from the Braita is that Netilat Yadayim in the morning is Me'akev. Washing your hands and feet before you go into Avodah, that's Me'akev, your Avodah. But as far as going to the Mikveh, nobody says that it's Me'akev. Even the Goyen Gadol, where we have it explicitly in the Psukim in Akhremot, it's not Me'akev, it's Avodah. So you, Ben Zoma, who's learning a Kavachomer from the Goyen Gadol in Yom Kippur, how could it be any more stringent than the Goyen Gadol himself? The writer says the Kohen Gadol himself, it's not Me'akev, it's Avodah. So you're going to tell me the Kav HaChomer that derives from it is going to be Mechel Avodah? No way. Ella l'mekim ba'aseh kamiflegeh. The machlok between them is, are you in violation of an aseh min ha-Torah? The Ben Zoma koi ba'aseh. According to Ben Zoma, the Kav HaChomer, which a person is allowed to be done, extends the din d'oraita from the Kohen Gadol, the aseh, to go to the mikveh when he switches his clothes, so someone's entering into the azara. So you're in violation of an aseh if you don't go to the mikveh. The Rabbi Yehuda, Lukai Basay. According to Rabbi Yehuda, of course it's not an assay, it's only a din, derabonon. So if you don't do it, you violate the din derabonon, you didn't violate an assay. The Gemara says, Umi itle Rabbi Yehuda hai savara. Does Rabbi Yehuda really have this logic, or this principle that we want to remind you, when you are tamei, to go to the mikveh again? Vatanya. Mitzara tovel ba'umeid b'shar nikanor. Mitzara has to go to the mikveh, and then go and stand by shar nikanor. Rabbi Yehuda omer, inu tzarich tvila. He doesn't need a tvila, shkvar tovel mi ba'erev. Because he already went to the mikveh the day before. Process of Tarata Mitzorah on the seventh day, the Mitzorah has to get his hair shaved, go to the mikveh, and have Harav Shemesh. On the eighth day, he has to bring his korbanot. Now, in bringing his korbanot, he is not tahor until he finishes up his korbanot. He may not enter into the mikdash. Over here, the Chachamim require him to go to the mikveh again on the eighth day, before he puts his thumbs and his big toes into the azara. He stands at Shar Nikanor. We saw this earlier in Masechta, that all the Shearim are Kodesh. The frames of the Shearim are Kodesh, except for Shar Nikanor, for the Mitzuraim. So the Mitzuraim can enter there and stick their thumbs in, because they have to have the blood and the Loga Shemen placed on their Behonot, and they need to stick them in order to do that. Either because of Gzeret HaKatuv, they're allowed to do that, or because Bia Mimiksat Loshmei Bia, coming into the Azara just in a small way with your thumbs, is not considered to be Bia, and that's why you're allowed to do this. So the Chachamim require them to go to the mikveh before they enter the Sha'ar Nikanor and put their thumbs in. Rabbi Yehuda says, why do you have to go to the mikveh? He just went to the mikveh on day 7. In order to be Tahor and come to the 8th day, he had to go to the mikveh on day 7 to have Harav Shemesh. If he didn't go to the mikveh yet, then he just can't go in. He has to have Harav Shemesh. He has to wait another day before he can bring his korbanot. If he's Tamei overnight, he needs Harav Shemesh, for sure. If you're Tamei, there's nothing that you can be Tamei for that going to the mikveh will solve. Maybe Tumah Derabbanan, but any Tumah that you will be Tamei, if you go to the mikveh, you need Harav Shemesh for. So how are you going into the Azarah, putting your thumbs in? How can you do anything? This mikveh, Rabbi Yehuda says, is completely unnecessary. So why does Rabbi Yehuda have the same shita here, which is he should go to the mikveh again to remind himself in case he became Tamei in the interim? So it seems from here that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to that logic. Then why is he saying that over here? Tamar says, how could iktani taima? Over there, the Braita says explicitly, shvar taval mi ba'erif. Because he already went to the mikveh the night before. In such a short duration, we're not going to have that problem of him forgetting about Tumah. He knows that he has to bring his korbanot the next day. He knows that he went to the mikveh the night before. He's fully engaged in dealing with tahara. And therefore, we're not going to worry about it. Tamar says, it's garila, my garila. So the questioner, when he brought this Braita, what was he thinking? The Braita is explicit as to the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda. Why is he bringing this as a question on Rabbi Yehuda's position? The Braita tells you what the reason is. What's the question to start with? He brought the Braita not because of the question here, but rather because we have a steer in Rabbi Yehuda's position, which is Lishkat ha-Mitzorain. One of the Lishkot in the Ezrat Nashim, there were four Lishkot that we discussed in the Ezrat Nashim, one of those Lishkot was Lishkat ha-Mitzorain. Shesham Mitzorain Tovlim. There, the Mitzorim go into the mikveh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo mitzorim liuvad amru, elo kol adam. Not only mitzorim go to the mikveh there, but anybody who's going to the Azarah has to go to the mikveh over there. So what do you have here? You have Rabbi Yehuda saying that the lishkat mitzoraim is for the mitzorah to go to the mikveh before he goes in. Now the chamim or the tanakam says it's exclusively for mitzoraim, but he says it's mitzoraim and everybody else. But he still believes the mitzorah has to go to the mikveh. What time are we talking about? We're not talking about the mitzorah on his 7th day. Because otherwise, there's no reason for him to go to the mikveh on Har HaBayit. I mean, technically, he's allowed to go on there. He's tahor enough to go on there. But why would you go to the mikveh in the Ezrat Nashim when you don't have to be there? You can go to the mikveh outside. You don't have to be in the Ezrat Nashim. So the fact that he's going to the mikveh in the Ezrat Nashim indicates it's on a day that he needs to be there. What day does he need to be there? On the 8th day. So here, Rabbi Huda is making him go to the mikveh on the 8th day. And in the previous Braita, he did not make him go to the mikveh on the 8th day. So, Lakasha, Adu Tavil, Adu Lo Tavil. No problem. Question, did he go to the mikveh on the 7th day or not? If he didn't go to the mikveh on the 7th day, he goes on the 8th day. If he went on the 7th day, he doesn't have to go. Gemara says, Ilo Tavil, Harav Shemesh Bayi. That doesn't work. If he never went to the mikveh and he only going on the 8th day, he still needs the sun to set on the 8th day before he can even come in to bring his korbanot on the 8th day. He'll have to wait till the 9th day then. That doesn't work. Ela Idu Idi Du Tavil. Then he went to the mikveh on the 7th day. Hada Asach Date, Hada Lo Asach Date. It's whether he had a Hesach Adat. If he doesn't have Hesach Adat, then he doesn't have to go to the mikveh again. If he has Hesach Adat, he has to go to the mikveh again, because then we start to fear that the problems of Tumah are creeping up. It says, Hesach Adat, he has Ashlishi Vishviboy. Forget about going to the mikveh. If he has Hesach Adat, and you're suspecting Tumah, we have to have a much broader suspicion, which is not about just Tumat Erev, or going to the mikveh. We have a Tumah of Shlishi and Shvi, which is Tumat Amet. The possibility of Tumat Amet, and then he has to get sprinkled on for the 3rd day and the 7th day. And he has to start becoming Tahor from scratch, because we're worried about the Tumah. Rashi says, Hashem anichnas to olamet, maybe he walked in. Again, the possibility here, like in Shari Tzedek, you walk in, there you have a morgue, and there, you didn't have a hospital or a morgue, there's a possibility you were in that place, they went in, you didn't realize you were with Tumah Tamet. Amar Rabbi Dustai Bar Maton, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hesach Adat, Sarich Hazash Tishvi. If you're Mesiach Dat from staying Tahor, you need to start from scratch, we suspect Tumah Tamet, not just Tumat Yom or Tumat Erev. Ella idvi lo asachdate. So okay, the case has to be in both these brightot where he wasn't mesiach dat. So why does he have to go to mikveh one time and not? Lokasha hada tavil adat biyat amigdash. Halo tavil adat biyat amigdash. This we find throughout the Mishnayot and Tarot is that there are different levels of tumah and tahara. First, it could be tahor legabe chulin. It could be tahor legabe truma. It could be tahor legabe kodoshim. It could be tahor legabe para. There are different levels of tahara, and one does not suffice for the other. If a person is simply mitahir himself for a certain level of tahara, that does not allow him to go up to the next level without re-engaging in the process of tahara. So in the case where he went to the mikveh on the 7th day knowing that he's going to enter in the mikdash tomorrow, there he cleared the hurdle that he needs in order to go into the mikdash and he's fine. If he went to the mikveh on the 7th day, just saying, I gotta be tahor, I'm waiting for the sunset, I'm tahor. But he didn't have in mind that that's also biat mikdash, he has to go a second time to the mikveh on the 8th day for biat mikdash, because that's a higher level of tahara, plus There's a chiyuv karet associated with being tamei and going into the azara. So now you're engaging in a higher level of tahara. Then you have to go to the mikveh again to upgrade your level of tahara. So that's the question. It's what he had in mind when he went to the mikveh on the seventh day. Did he get to the high enough level or not on the seventh day? Correct, correct. That we know from the Mishnayot and Taharot that when you wash your hands or you go to the mikveh, you have to have in mind what level of tahara that you're engaging in. Otherwise, you have to go again to the mikveh or wash your hands again to attain the higher level of tahara. We can amend the braita. The way we have in our braita is lo mitzorim bilvad. Not only mitzorim, but everybody has to go in. The way they amend it is lo mitzorim amru elo kol adam. It's rather, it's not them, but others. Mitzorim don't have to go at all. Others have to go there. Ah, why is it called lishkat mitzorim? Because ala rov, the mitzorim are the ones who are going to that mikveh or used it or needed it. Ravina Amar, Yehuda, the divrehem derabanan kamar. Ravina says, no, the answer is, Rav Yehuda is not speaking in his own position. Speaking in the position of the chachamim. So he's saying, the divrehem derabanan kamar, the didi, mitzorah, and tzarech tefillah. For me, the mitzorah doesn't need a tefillah. The didchu, odu li'ezum mihot, tlo mitzorim bilvadam, ru elo kol adam. If you hold like the Rabbanon, then you require the mitzvah to go again on the eighth day to the mikveh. So it shouldn't just be the mitzvah, it should be everybody has to go to the mikveh. Agree to me. I don't think he has to go at all. But you think he has to go, it's not only him, it should be everybody else has to go as well. Rabbanon, mitzvah, daish bituma, paladam, lo daish bituma. Clear distinction here. In mitzvah, until this point in time, has been not worried about tuma for a duration of time. He was a mitzvah. As a mitzvah, he has no consideration with regards to tumah. He's completely tameh. He's at a high level of tumah. He couldn't care less about tumah because he's already tameh. So because he's in that mindset, that frame of mind, he will become tameh easily. That's why we make him go back to the mikveh over and over again to make him conscious and reorient him towards being tahor all the time. Whereas kol adam, in general, he's in the world of tumah and tahara. And because of that, we don't make him go to the mikveh again. I'm going to buy the Rav Yosef. Neimo rabbonon de paligalei de Rav Yehuda. Let us say that the Rabbonon that argue on Rabbi Yehuda are holding like Ben Zuma. And why does it write Mitzorah? To teach you the strength of the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Oh, Dilma, shiny Mitzorah, the Daish Bituma. Or maybe the reason that they require the Mitzorah to go to the mikveh is because Daish Bituma. Now, the way Rashi reads this, is that in the first braita, we brought two braitot here. First braita is, Chachamim say, Mitzorah needs mikvah on the eighth day. Rabbi Yehuda says, no mikvah on the eighth day. Second braita, which says that a Mitzorah needs to go to the mikveh on the eighth day, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees, plus everybody else has to go to the mikveh. According to Rashi, the Gemara wants to know, in that first braita, the Chachamim that argue in Rabbi Yehuda and say that a Mitzorah always has to go to the mikveh on the eighth day. Why does the Mitzorah have to go to the mikveh on the eighth day? What is that requirement of mikveh on the eighth day? So there are two possibilities. Either they hold like Ben Zoma, or they hold like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara suggests maybe they hold like Rabbi Ben Zoma, and that's why they're requiring him to go to the mikveh on the eighth day. Because anytime you enter into the Kodesh, you need to go to the mikveh. That's a kal v'chomer, that's a din d'oraita. Here he's about to stick his thumbs into the azara, he has to go to the mikveh. That's the din of Ben Zoma. So do they believe that's d'oraita? And according to Rashi, that will argue on the second braita. Second braita that says the mitzvah has to go to the mikveh will only be a din d'rabbonon over there. But over here, it's a din d'oraita in the first braita, and the chachamim will argue. On the other hand, maybe it's all because of daish bituma. The reason that the chachamim can go back on the eighth day is not because it's a din d'oraita, but rather because v'choshesh bituma. It's only a din in mitzorah. Mitzorah has to go to the mikveh because he's so used to being tamei that we make him go again in case he got engaged in tuma. But in the first way we read it, that it's d'oraita, we're saying that it would be mitzorah on anybody else. Anybody else enter the azarah, it's called the mikveh, midah oraita. And mitzorah is just an example. Why mitzorah? To teach it. Rabbi Yehuda says mitzorah doesn't need to do it. So that's the way Rashi poses the question. But that means that the braita, the chachamim, the braita would argue according to this. The Tosafot says he doesn't like that. He says, why would you create a machloki between the braitot? But rather, he says that it's the same din by both of them. He says, even the Chachamim, the second Braita, which says Shar Kol Adam, goes in. Why does Rashi say that the second Braita doesn't agree with the first Braita? Because if in the first Braita you say Mitzorim go plus Shar Kol Adam, the second Braita, who's of the opinion that Shar Kol Adam is Rabbi Yehuda? Implying that the Chachamim don't require Shar Kol Adam to go to the mikveh. So that's why he would create a machlok between them. Tosafot says, even if you hold like Ben Zoma, we can reconcile between the two Braitot, because the Rabbanan over there believe that Shar Adam could also go to the mikveh. Why did it say Mitzorah only? Because they wanted to go Diacha Koachal de Rabbi Yehuda. That they focus on Mitzorah because they want to show Rabbi Yehuda's position with regards to Mitzorah. Or you could say, why they mention Mitzorah is because that's the Ikar usage of the Lishka was made for Mitzorayim. Yes, other people used it, but Mitzorah was the key reason. That's why it was called Lishka de Mitzorayim. Or you could say that their machloket is about Shar Kol Adam, whether they went on Shar HaMayim, or did they go over here? I mean, it was another mikveh for them besides Lishka de Mitzorayim. For all those reasons, Tosafot thinks that you can reconcile between Braitot, even if the Rabbanan hold like Ben Zoma. Tosafot also notes over here that the question is not solely whether they just hold like Ben Zoma. It could even be that they hold like Rabbi Yehuda. There's only machloket between them is whether it's Doraita or Derabbanan. And the reason the Gemara focuses on Ben Zoma, probably because it's Din Doraita, but also because he was the beginning of the sugya. He's the one who the question was posed to about why do we go to the mikveh before you enter into the Azara. But according to Tosafot and Ochanami, this question about the Rabbanan's position in the first Braita, according to Rashi, or according to Tosafot, the Rabbanan's position in both Braitot, could be either according to Ben Zoma or even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Gemara concludes and says, Amalei, shiny mitzorah the daish betuman. He answers him, no, mitzorah is shiny because of daish betuman is all a din derabanan, and they're not necessarily subscribing to the position of ben zoma. Amalei Abai, the Rav Yosef, tvila zu, chotzeitz, o eno chotzeitz. Does this tvila, does it create a chatzitza or not create a chatzitza? Meaning, to go to the mikveh, you're not allowed to have anything on your body. There's certain requirements that you can't have chatzitzot on your body. But, because of the nature of this tvila, according to Rashi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says it's all din derabanan to remind you that you might be tameh. It's not a real tevila. It's just a reminder tevila. Do you have to worry about chatzitza? Because it's not a real tevila. So if it's just a reminder tevila, we shouldn't have to worry about all these issues. That's what Abaye's question he poses to his Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef. So that's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot says he thinks that it's a question for both Ben Zoma and Rabbi Yehuda, and this is Tosafot the Shita To again. Tosafot the Shita To says that Ben Zoma has a tevila derabanan also if you're not going in to do avoda. That's a tevila derabanan. And they're asking over here, if you have to go to Tevila Derabanan, which is just a reminder of Tevila, do you have to worry about Chatzitza, or do you not have to worry about Chatzitza? Malay called to Tikkun Rabbanan, came to write to Tikkun. You're right. Technically, you're right, but when the Rabbanan established something, they always patterned it after a Din Doraita. So if Doraita, it would be a problem of Chatzitza, so too, a Tevila Derabanan would also be a problem of Chatzitza. I would add in that the problem is if it reminds that he really had to go to the mikveh, and he has to wait for Erev Shemesh, at least this would qualify for him going to the mikveh. If he does it with the chatzitza, then he has to go to the mikveh again in order to be tahor, because he went in with the chatzitza. So he may as well be going to the mikveh for real, in case he remembers something, and he actually went to the mikveh. But that's where Rav Yosef answers Abaye, that it has all the qualifications, or all the trappings of a tevila d'oraita. Tosafot says that, as opposed to any other tevila d'rabanan, in other tevila d'rabanan, there's at least a chashash tumah. Over here, they're going to the mikveh without any chashash tumah. The guy's completely tahor. He knows his story. He still has to go to the mikveh. So over here, that's why the Gemara poses this question with regards to this tevila, not by any other tevila derabanan, because it seems to be completely unnecessary, superfluous, because there's no need for it at all. So that's why the Gemara here says, does it have all the trappings of a normal trip to the mikveh? And the answer is, yes, because kein doraita tikein, because they did it like the Torah, and that's the way the Rabbanan always established their principles, is based on the paradigm doraita. Okay, we'll stop over here.